live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is going to be an empowering hour. Commentaries every day this week. The feedback from people around the world, and we're all over the world, is that social issues, commentaries, conversations with remarkable mind guests, and then health and nutrition. That's the new priorities. But of course, we always start with the latest on health and healing. Today, grape extract and what it does to help major diseases. Also, exercise is good for sleep, and I'll tell you why. Then we're going to look at a high-fiber diet, which can really save some lives, and I'll explain that in detail. Always the latest in health and healing, always from quality peer-reviewed journals, and always cited. Then from our public health issue today, do you have back pain? How about hot flashes? Well, Big Pharma hopes you do have these. An insight from Martha Rosenberg from Op-Ed News, how making you believe that you're sicker than you are allows them a chance to sell you drugs, selling sickness. Public Health Edition. Then a letter that I received, vis-a-vis my producer, from one of the world's leading immunologists who just returned from presenting a paper before a group of scientists on vaccines. I'll read the one paragraph letter. It is probably 6 months or a year away from the article being published in a peer-reviewed journal before it goes out to everyone, but you'll get an idea of what's good and what's up there. In our commentary today, Empire of Panic and Ephemera, Applying Rigorous Imagination to America's Paranoid Style. Philip Rostro from Common Dreams. We have a lot to share, and my guest in the second part of our program today, talking about new trends, the popular backlash in Italy and Europe, and why it does matter in the United States. Gerald Salante, one of America's leaders in trend strategy. He looks where things are going, the trend, and then makes some very accurate predictions about what the outcome will likely be. So we'll be looking forward to hearing from Gerald Salante in a few moments. Let's begin. I know that people in this audience appreciate the importance of grapes and non-alcohol or 1% alcohol wine, red wine, organic, no sulfates. That's fine. But of course, if you drink grape juice, organic grape juice, like Concord grape juice, that's really good. I mean, that's a super good. But even better is if you're eating grapes, the skin and the seed. And best of all, if you simply take a supplement of grape seed and grape skin extract. Most of the therapeutic levels are around 75 milligrams, but I believe in optimal levels, 100, 150 milligrams. And I know many of you are getting that amount every day because you're taking your red compounding powders, and that's how much is in there. We now look at all these nuts and seeds and fruits and vegetables a little differently. We, meaning those of us who are trying to be optimally healthy. We know that there are hundreds and hundreds of chemicals called phytochemicals, and then they're broken into all types of subgroups, the polyphenol groups, the iothene groups, the lipoic acids. They're all in here, the quercetins, the bioflavonoids. They all do something unique. They help protect your cell or repair the damage done to your cell. Now, it doesn't matter what's caused the damage. Maybe you were around in some environmental toxins. Maybe you drank or smoked or took drugs or marijuana. All of those pollute the body, and it damages your cell, and that's why you get older biologically. So it doesn't matter what the reason is. It matters what does it do when we take something that can repair it. This is from the journal Applied Physiology, Nutrition, and Metabolism. Here's what it says. Grape seed extract can help fight the damage caused by a high-fat diet. Hello, that's the average American diet. 80% of all Americans consume high-fat diets. We know this because of obesity, heart disease, cancers, colorectal cancers, and that are related to a high-fat diet. Quote, intake of grape seed and skin extract could be a valuable weapon in the fight against kidney disease caused by high-fat diets. Consuming supplements containing grape seed and skin extracts may be a valuable therapeutic and preventative measure to fight obesity-induced kidney damage. The new insights from researchers is the first to make a link between grape extract and an effect on kidney problems induced by high-fat diet. Quote, in our research, obesity-induced leaky kidney are shown to be prevented by the grape seed and grape skin extract, which suggests that the use of these as a preventative nutraceutical for high-risk patients is positive. And that's good news. So one more reason to make sure that you get your grapeseed extract. But there's more. A completely separate study, and this published in Functional Foods and Health and Disease, Volume 2, Issue 12. The title of the article is Effect of Grape Seed Extract on Postprandial Oxidative Status and Metabolic Responses in Men and Women with Metabolic Syndrome Randomized Crossover Placebo-Controlled Study. Now, that's the kind of study I like to read, and I'll explain it in lay language because it meets all the criteria. It's a double-blind placebo-controlled study, and it's a large group of people. It's published in a peer-reviewed journal. It's done at a major institute. So why is that important? Because for decades, if we made any suggestion that a vegetable or a fruit or a diet or exercise or meditation or de-stressing would help a person improve their health, we would hear quackery, nonsense, and the average American simply wouldn't look in our direction because the official spokespersons for their lives said, there's nothing over there. So we show, oh yes, there is. This research was done at the University of California, Davis, and they used the polyphenolics mega natural ingredients, and here's what it says, that it substantially reduced systolic and diastolic blood pressure, a prehypertensives, but no improvements were shown in the placebo group. They used 300 milligrams a day of grapeseed extract, and it was, quote, associated with reductions in systolic and diastolic blood pressure of 8 and 5 mmHg after 8 weeks. And this was published in the Journal of Pharmacy and Nutritional Sciences. So one more reason to use grapeseed. Well, it does two different things from two different research studies. And so it's helping you if you have kidney problems. It's helping you if you are fat. And it's helping you if you have cardiovascular problems or cholesterol. And then they went on to do some additional studies and showed that it helps reduce cholesterol and it helps the heart. All good things. So grape seed extract and grape skin extract, generally you get them together. Most Americans are not getting a good night's sleep for a lot of reasons. We're socializing later. We're drinking more alcohol, and that affects our sleep. We're eating sugar late at night or foods that break down into simple sugars, the polysaccharides in the body, like any form of late dining. It's still in our stomach, so the body doesn't know quite what to do. It doesn't want to stop digesting. That's not a good thing. And yet, if it continues digesting, part of the byproduct of digesting food is energy production. The mitochondria are suddenly given the energy, and now they start to percolate. You get that adenosine triphosphate pumping energy. Okay, well, we don't want that when we're going to bed. We want to rest. Then we generally have noise. That distracts us. We have light. That distracts us. Even when your eyelids are closed, if you have a light outside, like a street light or you have a television light, your brain actually senses that. So if we've used a cell phone, that overheats the brain. And I'm going to be putting a study up on our website in the next few days that shows you the brains of average people and teenagers and kids after they've used a cell phone for just 2 minutes. These are very revealing because they show you how hot your brain gets, and that's not good. So for all these reasons, we're not getting a good night's sleep. Well, if we don't get a good night's sleep, then how are we supposed to produce enough melatonin from the pineal gland, which is supposed to detoxify the brain and the body and help our immune system and get us into a deep sleep cycle so we wake up refreshed, energized, and ready to go? So what can we do? Well, we can just reverse everything I just mentioned. Don't eat within 4 hours going to bed. If you're really hungry, have some lemon juice and cold water. That will kill your appetite. If you must have some food, have some popcorn, organic popcorn. That won't cause your blood sugar to rise, but at least you'll feel some satiety. Turn off all the lights. If you can't get all the lights off, just get one of those very soft, velvety iPads, and you put it over your eyes, and you can sleep, much like you'll see on an airplane. Put in earplugs if you can't turn off the sound around you. But there's one other thing you can do, and that's from this study, and it's a good thing. You can exercise. Quote, from the National Sleep Foundation, exercise is a great way to get better sleep. For the millions of people who want to fall asleep, exercise may help. So they're looking at how a person is exercising and then relating that to their sleep, and they're seeing enormous differences in how much quality sleep a person gets if they have exercised versus if they haven't. But you don't want to be exercising too late in the evening either, because that'll keep you awake. But light exercise in the early evening and vigorous exercise in the morning, you get your best sleep. So, good news for those of you who have insomnia. And I absolutely do not recommend anyone taking that stupid pill. Now, those who are getting acne and don't know why, and this is teenagers and adults, one thing may be dairy. The newest study shows the more dairy you take, the more acne you develop. So, cut out the dairy. High-fiber diet shown to prevent cancer progression. This is really good. This is from the peer-reviewed journal, the Cancer Prevention Research. And here's what it says. And this was done at the Skaggs School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences. Quote, for over a decade, people have been told to incorporate a high-fiber diet into their lifestyle in order to prevent and help reverse colon cancer. But what about other cancers? Now researchers are sounding the recommendation based upon new findings linking an increase in fiber intake and the fight against cancer, with a recent study finding that a high-fiber diet can slow the progression of prostate cancer. The study conducted at the University of Colorado and published in the Cancer Prevention Research involved testing a known inositol hexophosphate, or IP6, and it's a chemical largely present in high-fiber diets and found specifically in foods like beans and peanuts and brown rice and sesame seeds and whole grains. And researchers fed one group of mice IP6, the other did not receive the compound, and then they monitored the outcome, and in the end, prostate tumors in the mice fed IP6 simply did not grow and progress at the same rate as those found in the other mice. So, quote, the study's results were really rather profound. We saw dramatically reduced tumor volumes, primarily due to the anti-angiogenic effects of IP6, and that's what they said, so that's good news. Now, there are a lot of other ways we can prevent prostate cancer. For example, there was research at the Georgia University that showed that whole ginger extract was revealed to shrink prostate tumor size by 56%. and the anti-cancer properties were observed in addition to ginger's role in reducing inflammation and being a source of life-enhancing antioxidants. And in fact, there's one thing I'm sure most people have not heard of, let alone use, but for those of us who work with people with cancer, and I do all the time, I recommend turkey tail mushroom. Now, there's good research that's focused upon a compound known as polysaccharide peptide, or PSP, which is found in the turkey tail mushroom. And what was found was that mice fed the PSP over 20 weeks did not develop any prostate tumors, whereas the group fed, not fed it, developed tumors. And finally, let's just look at the practical aspects of life for the average man in the United States. They don't get the exercise they need. The older they get, the less exercise they do. They spend way too much time sitting on couches or at desks, watching either television or computers, or in cars. They're not eating a healthy diet. And one of the biggest things we could do for cancer, green leafy vegetables. How about that for something inexpensive and easy? But you got to make sure you get them into your diet. Now, if you did power walking for an hour a day and you had a green leafy vegetable juice to start your day, specifically what is known as the brassicas, that's the cruciferous vegetables, you can lower your risk of developing cancer. Even brisk walks can be highly effective at enhancing overall health and simultaneously fending off an increased risk of colon cancer. Yeah, the more you power walk, the less your opportunity for colon cancer, because you're speeding up peristalsis, which is the wave-like rhythmic movement to get food through the intestine, and that's what you want. So how about this? Something really basic. How about starting your day by taking some vitamin C? And it's different for each person. You have to kind of go up and find your tolerance level, and then make yourself a little healthy shake in the morning. Add in your take your vitamin E and tocotrienols, coenzyme Q10 and NADH. Take hawthorn berry and also take cayenne as well as quercetin. Now, all that helps prevent a heart attack when you're exercising. Then have all that. Chug it down with some coconut water. That gives you potassium, which your body needs. Then do a really brisk 1 hour nonstop, if you can. Build up to it and take your time. Build up gradually and measure your pulse rate so you know what your beginning and middle and end pulse rate is, and cool down an hour a day. Then when you return from having that exercise, have some celery and cucumber, apple, and some other mixed greens, whatever you have available. And that's a great way to start the day. You're going to lessen your likelihood of prostate cancer, colorectal cancer, and if you're a woman, ovarian and breast cancer. Green is the color of health. One final thing. Someone asked me recently while I was waiting in an airport to catch a flight to where I was filming. An older man, I'm suggesting that he was in his late 80s, he looked in good health, excuse me, and he asked, I saw you a long time ago in Arizona lecturing. I don't even remember when it was. And he said, all I remember is that you were up there in this all-white suit and a black shirt, and we just don't see things like that out here at that time, and you were just the example of vitalism. And I'm thinking he looks like a young Bernard McFadden. By the way, Bernard McFadden, for those of you who are not aware of the health movement, he was the leading health educator in the United States from the beginning of the 1900s up through the mid-1950s. He lived a very long life. And his wife, Johnny Lee McFadden, I met her when she dropped by a radio studio. I was broadcasting on a Saturday on WMCA, and she was just a ball of energy. And she was 85 and just as healthy as possible. And she, one day, about 2 years later, she brought me in these cases of original first edition signed copies of his health library. And he was a vitalist. He believed in exercising and eating lots of living food and getting out into nature and drinking lots of healthy water and sunbathing, even in the wintertime. He was a really interesting guy. But also he believed in apple cider vinegar, taking some raw honey, a teaspoon of raw honey and apple cider vinegar every morning. And I've been doing that, not because of Bernard McFadden. I didn't even know he was at that time. I didn't know anything about him until actually to his wife introduced me to who he was. Instead, my great aunt started the day with apple cider vinegar and honey, and I was the only one of the kids that would actually take it. And later, I looked into what's actually in this. Well, we know that apple cider vinegar has been around a long time. In fact, for thousands of years. Even Hippocrates used apple cider vinegar about 400 BC. Why is it good? Why should we use it? And by the way, never get the clear cider. Always get it where you see that sediment, you know, moving around inside, because then that means it has not been distilled or treated. And that means that its nutrients are intact, and that's what you want. By the way, Paul Bragg was also, he was a great guy, and he was a big believer in it as well. It has anti-cancer properties. It prevents bladder stones, urinary tract infections. It strengthens your immune system. It helps alleviate arthritis and gout. It reduces sinus infections and sore throats. It helps balance high cholesterol. It's great for, if you ever have food poisoning, you take apple cider vinegar and charcoal capsules. That will help. It increases metabolism, which promotes weight loss. It improves digestion. It helps prevent muscle fatigue, especially for athletes. And it's terrific even for animals. So, and it actually helps with bad breath. Lots of reasons to use it. Something that simple, that inexpensive, that old-fashioned, but it works. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Has been led to believe that there's only one credible media source, and that's the mainstream. However, independent listeners who want honest information continue to turn to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network, for the media of truth, insight, and empowerment. Based on current statistics, in the next 12 months, we will have 1.7 million new listeners visiting our site. So on a daily basis, that's an average of 4,600 new independent minds turning outside the mainstream for their information on the world today. David Ide of Voice America writes, quote, I wanted to congratulate you and your team for providing once again the highest rated show on the Voice America networks. In addition, the Progressive Radio Network is the highest trafficked for the sixth straight month as well, and is without a doubt one of the most compelling, best produced, and highest trafficked internet-based radio stations. Unquote. Thank you for helping us to move forward. We at PRN are honored to be your source for the media of truth, insight, and empowerment.
Just letting you know, there are other sources of information, and we are one of them. And by the way, over up to 100 brand new articles on progressive-themed issues in all areas of life every single day. Let's say hello to Jeremy. He's in our studio in New York City. Hi, Jeremy.
Good afternoon, Gary.
Jeremy, you're looking for some interns.
That's right. We're looking for some interns to help with a couple of projects we have going on at the office. First, we're in the process of archiving some documentary footage, and we would appreciate the help of some well-organized interns who can help in the effort. Also, we are undertaking a few research projects, and we're looking for a few interns with good research and writing skills who would like to help us out. So if anyone is interested, please give me a call at the following number. That is 646-926-5434. I'll repeat that one more time. 646-926-5434.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Absolutely. We'd really appreciate the assistance. Thank you.
Jeremy is one of our scholars in residence. We have a lot of research being done. I'm out on the road. I'm filming and sending him the footage every day. We have about 10 major feature documentaries in production or post-production right now. And we're hopeful to get these out to help the different social issues and causes that a lot of people are engaged in. I believe that one of the reasons so many Americans are so susceptible to the body politic and to the demagogues, to the ideologues, to the spokespersons, to the propagandists, is because they keep us in a perpetual state of panic. And from that panic frequently comes the extension of our own paranoia. In the consumer paradigm, one is induced to exist by Eric Hoffer's dictum, you can never get enough of what you really don't need. Wherein the individual exists in a state of perpetual adolescence, emotionally oscillating between life lived as a bliss ninny and evincing chronic dissatisfaction. I'm sure all of us have had that moment when we ask someone, what do you want? And they look at us and they ponder, and in that vacuous eye we see emptiness. They don't know, but they do know they feel unsettled, dissatisfied, entitled to fill that moment up as quickly as they can with whatever they can, irrespective of whether it's going to hurt them or help them. Ever-shifting, in-cahoot compulsions and endless distractions define the days of the denizens of the consumer state. Text messages and tweet gibber, like souls stranded in a limbo realm between the worlds of the living and the damned. Craving and angst are interwoven, held by the dazzle of light playing over the surface of a deep abyss. The consumer floats along on wax wings of debt. The landscape does not seem solid. Constant craving and callous disregard ascend to the throne room of consciousness in this empire of ephemera. The passions of the heart are circumvented by chronic discontent. In this manic mythos of eternal moment, consumer items are collected and clutched and discarded like the idols and the talismans of a dying cult. But there is neither the time nor inclination to erect statues to these gods of the limbic system. The gods exist as ever reconfiguring constellations of pixels. As Nixies, they hold the senses enthralled as the global capitalist paradigm sinks beneath a drowning tide of self-created illusion. Beneath the endless obligation of debt servitude and the manic distractions of the consumer state, an amorphous dread gathers, shunted aside, it is experienced as free-floating, low-grade paranoia. And hence, we have become that paranoia. We do not know what to trust. We do not know whom to trust. We do know, however, that we are not going to connect. And by staying disconnected from our truths, disconnected from our obligations, to walk in the direction of our fears, walk in the direction of your anger, your hatred, your loathing. Walk there so you can see what it is that has created this angst and see, are there solutions? What can you identify when you look in the life of mirror, when you look in your educational system, in your government, in your bureaucracies, in your church, your synagogue, your mosques? What are you looking at? What do you see? Not why are you there? What is happening there? Are the denizens of Wall Street truly capable of serving the needs of themselves and we, the public, in a fair and objective way simultaneously? Clearly not. But if we took the time to look, we would see that truth. If we look on television, are these ads meant to give my body and my mind the strength and the nutrients I need to provide a long and lasting and healthy life? The answer is obviously no. Are we unaware of that? Can we not comprehend that? Is that beyond our existential capacities? No, it is not. And hence, as I place this before you, members of the U.S. military sit hunched behind computer screens, enacting slaughter by means of a predator drone strike. These cubicle-bound soldiers of the consumer state, who have spent their lifetimes within the mass media hologram of late capitalism, regard delivering death from across vast distances as a type of distant consumerist gratification. We applaud them. 80% of Ed Schultz's audience on MSNBC, the official Obama network, applauds them. The corporatist liberals, the corporatist Democrats, applaud them. Job well done. You've protected us. And I say, look in the mirror again. From what? From yourself? From your own paranoia? You've surrendered your dignity. You've surrendered your intellect. You've surrendered your character. You've surrendered your common sense, your reason, your values. You've surrendered everything that is important so that some manipulative, maniacal sociopath can tell you that you should be afraid of them, yes, but not of some far-off terrorist in a cave in Afghanistan. But their actions do not instill a sense of safety within the homeland. Incrementally, it increases the gathering dread. Thus, this war by the remote control is self-perpetuating. Warfare experiences consumer craving, the mode of mind of a shopping addict. But instead of possessing closets bloated with unneeded consumer items, the empire collects corpses. Izzy Stone famously averred, "Governments lie." You think? It is a given. Government and corporate insiders scheme and plot. In the days before they had to create the illusion that government officials were responsive to the dictates of the electorate, rulers, their advisors, and counselors created deceptive strategies in pursuit of holding and acquiring greater power in secret behind closed doors. With all, their plots were not termed conspiracies. Their machinations and attendant acts were called a day at work. Panic is the sudden realization that everything around you is alive, so said William Burroughs from Ghost of Chance. The U.S. possesses a cheap seat view of reality by skybox-level self-deceptions, a conspiracy-apprehending mode of mind attempts to find connections and detect affinities. In this respect, it is similar to a poetic sense of awareness. Although this distinction is imperative, a habitually paranoid perspective must have a tendency towards introspective self-awareness, i.e., an ego-leveling element, where it tends to become pathologically self-centered. Thus, an inner conspiracy is locked into place, confining the psyche of the sufferer to the mental realm of self-reference, whereby life itself, in its unknowable vastness, threatens to penetrate, causing the fragile ego construct of the paranoia prone to erect even greater barriers of insularity, thus creating the effect of a psychic room of infinity mirrors. The entire U.S. media, the entire U.S. political establishment, the entire religious community in the United States is a collection of paranoid cultural addicts. The nation has not seen the foreign enemies posing an existential threat, yet they swoon in collective fear and bristle with the apparatus of the national security state, ever approaching incrementally, day by day, another executive order, another fiat, another false flag, another intervention, another Homeland Security cache of caskets and armored vehicles and guns for the American citizenry. And yet we smile and vote and give them a carte blanche check. And do we ask who these are meant for? Who? For me? Couldn't be me. must be for the terrorist. It is not a lack of conviction that brings so much suffering to humanity. It is a lack of rigorous imagination. Rigorous imagination is not the same thing as a desperate need for belief or a tendency to become convinced of the reality of any notion that arrives in your head. Rigorous imagination allows you to engage in democratic discourse with the disparate beings inhabiting the polis of your psyche, but not be swept away by a mob rule or entranced by charismatic, neurotic, or paranoid characters within you who have a monumental, maniacal agenda. These inner characters, gods, animals, and monsters can be helpful to you. It is futile to attempt to repress them, but you must have a grip on them, or they will grip you. Ergo, this is the difference between clinging to narrow convictions and a heart-opening, senses-awakening, mind-vivifying embrace of rigorous imagination. Our convictions, our beliefs, our motives have been formed from a mixture of apprehensions sprung from the seeds of bias and misapprehensions that contain a tiny measure of truth. Generally, what we term thinking and knowing is, more often than not, an anonymous process, an unconscious seeking of affinities, a mating dance of known quantities and recognizable possibilities, allowing one to view the world as the unfolding of the plausible, a trek across recognizable, navigatable terrain, and not a bewildering bog of proliferating novelty, lacking both familiar landmark and the lexicon of a known tongue. As a people, what is our legacy to the future generations? Depressing, isn't it? Ecocide, debt slavery, war without end, a social milieu in which privileged psychopaths not only thrive but decide the fate of everyone else? And where were you when this happened? Where were you? Lost. Let's take a digressive scan at the known landscape of the late capitalist era, where there exists a desperate campaign by the economic elite to have the floundering system be accepted as not only viable, but the only rational option available to all concerned. Yet a predominance of evidence stands to the contrary. Withal, the present economic system can only maintain the illusion of viability, growing ever tenuous by the hour, by lurching from market bubble to market bubble in combination with government infusions of trillions upon trillions of dollars, as well as the complicity of the most corrupt organization, the corrupt media, all of which is organized in such a way to manipulate us by our unwillingness to differentiate illusion from reality. And hence we are all brought under by the illusion. And officialdom is part of the swindle. Swindles past and ongoing. By abandoning their roles as advocates for the many and assuming the position of operatives of a moneyed elite. Whistleblowers, dissidents, all of those who harbored a proclivity to apprehend the true nature of the circumstances that forces of self-serving power have wrought and ruthlessly strive to maintain, innately carry within and speak a language that is both alien and threatening to the status quo. Yet through it all, a mutant seed nourished by the composting convictions of our culture dreams within our soul that contains a blueprint that will allow me to live my life knowingly. And to help you knowingly. With the rest, it is all unconscious. Opening one's self to the truth of the matter allows you to make the positive choice. Circumstances do not change unless perceptions change. Accordingly, the big lie promulgated by the elite of our corrupt era is there is something wrong with an individual who will not or cannot accept the official version of events. Sir, I stand ready to challenge everything official. I'm Gary Nall. Let's now go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by, Gerald Salante. Nice to have you with us today, Gerald.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Gary.
Gerald, let's take a look at the trends that you see unfolding before us and what will be the outcome from your perspective, considering that Americans just saw the biggest monthly income drop in 20 years. And that we're also looking in Bulgaria, where the government resigned as a result of massive protest. And we're looking at Spain, that now has a youth unemployment of 50%. We're looking at Slovenia, that is in the midst of major scandals, and tens of thousands of people are marching in the streets. And we look in Ireland, where tens and tens of thousands have taken to the streets against austerity policies, and they're refusing to pay new taxes. In the United Kingdom, the same is happening. In Scotland, the same is happening. In Catalonia, they are wanting to become sovereign. And you're looking at Italy, that's really upended everyone, with a new populist person there and his five-star movement saying no. You know, BB Grillo is led 25% of the new government. They're saying, we're not giving you any more money. We don't want in the European Union. Let's vote on it and let the public decide. And so any reason that we should be concerned in the United States based upon what's going on around the rest of the world, we seem to choose not to be aware of or care about?
Yeah, well, how about the queen having diarrhea and having to go to the hospital?
That's important.
And, of course, you know, the sinkhole story that was in the news for so long. I mean, it's a tragic story, but people are dying every day. It's not national news. And so what it is a diversion, and the American people are basically out of touch with what's going on or don't want to look at reality. As a matter of fact, this Next Trends Journal, the spring edition that we're working on, it's called We Don't Want to Hear It. And for all the reasons people are tuning out, they either are afraid to hear it, they don't want to believe they're living a lie, or they don't have the courage to do something about what they know about what's going on. So, for example, we just went through, you remember the whole beginning of the end of last year, we were going to go over a fiscal cliff. So they had fear and hysteria running very well throughout last year. And now, of course, they come up with a new word, you know, sequestering, you know. Well, yeah, what's that? So what it all is I said, more fear and hysteria. And people should be looking very closely at what's going on, as some of the countries you mentioned, in Portugal, in Slovenia, in Hungary. As a matter of fact, in Portugal last week, millions of people took to the streets, never made the broadcast news in the United States. The week before, several million took to the streets in Spain. You're looking at what's going on in Greece. It's continual riots all the time, suicide rates off the charts, poverty levels at record levels. Oh, and by the way, right here in the good old USA, I believe the number came out yesterday in New York about the homeless, about 50,000 people sleeping in homeless shelters. That doesn't count all the ones that are on the streets and undercounts really the tragedy of what's going on. So what we're looking at what's going on in Europe is a signal of what's going on here, with the exception that the people in Europe have the courage to stand up and speak out and fight back. While the Americans are, you know, we're the most obese nation, they can hardly get up off the couch. We're prescription drug to death. Our brains are brain dead. So the people don't have the will to fight, and they keep supporting it's the Stockholm syndrome. They keep supporting those who torture them. Going back to Italy, Gary, this is the most important trend that everyone should be looking at. Beppe Grillo's five-star movement. He has gotten 25% of the vote, more than any other party, 26% actually. The other two, the Bersani and the Berlusconi, the separate parties, have coalitions. So they didn't really get that many votes per party. The importance of it is, Gary, he did it without ever sitting in front of a camera run by the prostitutes in the mainstream media. It was an online revolution. Beppe Grillo has the biggest following on Facebook and Twitter than any other European politician. And, of course, they denounce him as a comedian. Oh, these other guys aren't comedians? Oh, Berlusconi's not a comedian? Oh, Obama, Bush, Clinton, you know, show politics is show business for ugly people. Oh, they're just buffoons? So they try right away by putting the word comedian in front of it. That already puts in your brain, write this off, it doesn't matter. It does matter. Because all the people that are also going into the parliament are people that are totally disconnected from the political systems. This is huge. This is a revolt underway that's undermining the parties in Italy. And it's a movement that could really start to bring about some freedom and true democracy, because one of the major elements of Beppe Grillo's party is direct democracy. Let the people vote. And if anybody wants to see of what the people, let the people vote looks like, go back to 2 days ago and see what they did in the world leader of direct democracy, Switzerland. The people voted to stop giving these fat cat corporate heads and bankers all of these salaries that are fit for pigs and princes, and let the shareholders vote on them. The people voted 67% in Switzerland to put a rein on this corporate takeovers that are ruining countries, not only in Switzerland, companies in Switzerland, but around the world. That's direct democracy. And what Beppe Grillo wants to do is let the Italian people vote. Do you want to stay with the euro, or do you want to go back to the lira? Let the people vote. Direct democracy, to me, Gary, is the only way out of this. And people say, well, that's mob rule. Well, what do you think that's going on now? A mob is ruling. And you want to see how the mob is ruling? Just look at that little thing that just happened, a couple of days ago that probably nobody saw. That's right. The Senate passed a resolution that allows, if Israel is attacked or they attack, then we, the people of the United States, are obligated to support them. Yeah, it's out of our hands. Why should we have anything to do with it? And now they're also talking about the headline news. It's heating up. Clock runs out as Obama faces pressure for striking Iran. Oh, yeah, you want to strike Iran? How about asking us? So I believe that the Beppe Grillo model is the model to look at.
Okay, so we can get more issues and a little shorter answers. Now, I believe that it's inevitable, absolutely inevitable, that Israel and its extreme right-wing and fascistic government will cause a war with Iran. I believe when that happens, economically, China will see this as its opportunity to make a economic move where it will not be afraid then to challenge the United States currency. It will have Russia, India, Brazil, and over 20 other countries on its side when it does this, because it's been working on this since 2005. And so where we will be militarily helping Israel, they will be economically using this with a war with Iran to shift away from any longer buying our dollars, dropping the value of the dollar on the market, raising the value of their currency, and in effect shifting the United States, when no one was paying attention, out of having the reserve currency, which will then cause hyperinflation, interest rates through the roof, real estate will plummet, the value of a dollar will drop substantially, and could cause a major world turner economically. That's a hypothesis that is possible. What in that hypothesis do you see as plausible?
Well, the first one you mentioned about China. Look what they're doing. As the United States is waging wars and sending our money overseas, they're becoming the biggest purchasers of gold, along with Russia. And why are they purchasing gold? So that they could back the yuan with something that means something rather than quantitative easing and a debasement of the currency. So as they continue to trade more around the world, what they're doing is they're trading in yuan and replacing the dollar as the reserve currency along with the other BRIC nations that you mentioned. So that's what they're doing, and the strategy is right there in front of everybody's eyes. And by the way, as we look at this and look what's going on, China is now also becoming the largest importer of oil. Do you think they're going to stop buying oil from Iran? Do you think they're going to stop buying oil and doing more in Africa? And by the way, Gary, that's why the French invaded Mali. It's about the Chinese and the Indians, India, trying to get uranium out of Niger, which, of course, France, 75% of their electricity is nuclear-powered, and they need cheap uranium. So they're exploiting it from there. And also, a story that's not making the news, and by the way, I'm mentioning this because Africa is going to become the next battleground. Already the United States is in 35 countries with the AFRICOM units. Mali last year extracted over 50 tons of gold, and this is a dirt poor country, and that's up from 43 tons a year before. So you can see what this is all about.
A couple quick questions about the United States. Many of us see that there are multiple economies, and that the most important economy is the economy of Wall Street because it does not help the rest of America's economies. It does not help the poor, the middle class, the business class, the working class. It only helps the major corporations, fund managers, the hedge funds, and equity partnerships. So it's a closed, insular system. But it's extremely powerful. It owns the Washington politicians. What do you see the likely outcome in this bubble of the bubble of Wall Street? I believe it should be around 6,000, and I believe we're in for a major, major correction. And then I see the real estate market taking another tumble, and I see the value of the dollar strong now because of the euro. But I see the euro imploding because I don't see Italy staying in the euro when this populist position goes forward. And then I see in succession, I see Spain, Ireland, Portugal, all going behind Italy because Italy has the third largest debt to 125% debt to its gross domestic product. I see that causing a crush on the euro. I see that the dollar is going to be shaky. What do you see?
I see the same thing. I don't necessarily see inflation. What I see more is a devaluation of the currencies. So, for example, if you live in Zimbabwe and you buy a pound of coffee, the pound of coffee hasn't gone up. It just takes you more Zimbabwean dollars to buy it. So that's what I see is a devaluation of all of these currencies. But I also see war, and the wars are going on, and people don't want to call it what it is. There's a war in Portugal. You have millions of people taking to the streets. The suffering that's going on. I just got an email today from a subscriber to the Trends Journal in Portugal. He said 7 out of his 10 friends are out of work, and these are college-educated people. I get emails from Italy about the people that are starving. They can't make ends meet. I have friends in Greece that have lost everything. Their shops have closed up, and they don't know where their next dime is going to come from, and they froze just about all winter long. This is war. It's called class war. And then you have wars going.
Okay, how long do you see before what I had predicted, and you with me over 2 years ago, where they throw out the politicians, take over the buildings, and literally close down their governments to create a new government and rescind all debt? When do you see that happening? Or do you
see it happening now, but here's what I'm concerned about. I get these emails coming out of Greece, for example, about what's going on between the military and the government, and people in the military refusing to commit acts of violence against their own people. So what the government's doing are bringing in mercenaries to protect them. So it's not going to be an easy change. And the same thing is happening in Portugal, and Italy is preparing for it. And right here in the good old USA, you keep hearing about all of these stories about Homeland Security buying up all of these rounds of ammunition. So the governments know this is coming down. They know they can't support it. And it goes back to what you were saying, Gary, about when the stock market is going to crash. It's very simple. It's a very simple equation. It's going to happen one or two ways. Number one, when they raise interest rates. Because the only thing that's just keeping this market alive, and you could go back to Davos a couple of weeks ago, when they talked about the big news in Davos was LBOs, leverage buyouts. Because money's so cheap, you could do all these scams. When interest rates go up, then the market goes down. The only reason why people are investing in the stock markets, the average person, is because you can't put money in the bank and get any interest on it, like the old days when there was a thing called savings. Number two, as I said, they're heating up the rhetoric for war. The Middle East is ready to explode again. Egypt is in a deep depression. It's unraveling. Tunisia, they're rioting again on the streets. You, as I said, Bahrain, Yemen, Libya, the Italians couldn't get natural gas yesterday because of wars going on in Libya between the tribes. And also they brought in mercenaries to protect those assets as well. So what I'm saying is there's going to be some kind of a flashpoint, be it false flag or real, that is going to rattle the world markets. One of those things, interest rates going up, a stopping of all of this quantitative easing or dumping cheap money into the system. This is a Federal Reserve-inspired recovery or a false flag or real. And when I say false flag or real, just look what happened when Hurricane Sandy hit the East Coast. It almost shut it down. Could you imagine a dirty bomb going off in New York, a suitcase-sized nuke going off in London? Could you imagine biological warfare in France? That's what we're looking at. If the psychopaths continue to invade and occupy other nations.
Gerald, we're out of time. I appreciate you taking your time and insight. Gerald Celante is one of the pioneers of trend research. He founded the Trends Research Institute and they published the Trends Journal. And the website is trendresearch.com, the publication of Trends Journal. Gerald, thank you for being on. We look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks so much for having me, Gary.
I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Now it's time for Talk Back. Let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, one story that I think should have made more national news was the story of the newborn infant that was taken away from its mother and loaded up with drugs, the very subject of your 7 o'clock show Monday night. It's just phenomenal. I don't think there was a dry eye in the house for anyone who was listening. It was just incredible. That's the kind of information people need to hear. And boy, we had a lot of feedback about that show, Gary. A lot of people are listening in. And I love the fact that we're talking about, I like that concept of a Facebook revolution, an internet revolution, because you have a lot of listeners and they're paying attention.
Tomorrow I will be challenging the New York Times and what I consider just despicable reporting. They fell for propaganda. They weren't smart enough, or they were smart enough and were complicit. But tomorrow I will show that everything about that story should be challenged, and I will challenge it. And I will tell you the truth about what happens to HIV-positive babies on tomorrow's program. There isn't time today, but we'll get with that.
Okay. I do have an email. Do I have time?
Yes.
Okay. This is from Sean, and she's from California. And she said she's been a listener for over 30 years. She says, I was recently at a lecture in Los Angeles on health and nutrition by someone who has a popular selling book. She's not mentioning names. The information was okay, and the person was okay. And it reminded her that you had a lecture about 9 months ago, and she said, in comparison, your lecture was extraordinary. She remembered that even 30 years ago when she came to your lectures, the information was not only good, but the environment, the humor, the insights made the whole presentation so exciting. She said your event was sold out, plus you added two additional lectures the same day, which were also sold out. So in total, you must have had about 3,000 people. And she said you had the room rocking, and it was just alive with energy. So it was a completely different portrayal of health. So her question is this. She says, I'm noticing over the years that about every 2 to 4 years, you essentially reinvent yourself. And she says, how do you keep coming up with all this new original material, stuff that we're not hearing over and over, like the same old recycled thing with a new book cover?
It was John F. Kennedy who said, too often we enjoy the comfort of opinion without the discomfort of thought. I've never lived my life based upon the opinions of what people want or need. And hence, I've refused to align myself with the mainstream media, or I stop writing articles about 10 years ago because I didn't like the process of pandering to specific groups. As a result, I simply look at what I believe at this particular time in life do we need in order to make better choices. And because life and circumstances and time doesn't stop so that you can bathe in, you know, the moment of some success, then you simply keep in movement with the energy. And hence, there's a natural cycle. Every time something new happens, or something that requires a new perspective, a new way of looking, you simply offer it up. And for those who are ready for that message in that moment, you align yourselves, you synchronize your thoughts. And that's how you keep yourself relevant, by never stopping so long after you've achieved something that you forget the whole purpose of achieving something, whether it's writing a book or doing a lecture or a radio program or television special or documentary. These only serve to offer tools for people to challenge perceptions. So they shouldn't be an end to themselves. And so your mind is always prepared for the next thought, the next insight. It doesn't get lazy. That's the answer.
Okay.
Okay, let's go over and say hello to Utrice Lead, who's standing by. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, hello, hello. Today we are talking about Obama sequestered. We'll be taking a look at his double talk, and outright lies about the sequester, and what that means for the rest of us.
Well, that sounds very interesting, Utrice. His name was Fleming, and he was a poor Scottish farmer. And one day, while trying to make a living for his family, he heard a cry for help coming from a nearby bog. And he dropped his tools and ran to the bog. And there, mirrored into his waist in muck, was a terrified boy, screaming and struggling to free himself. Well, Farmer Fleming saved the lad from what could have been a slow and terrifying death. And the next day, a fancy carriage pulled up to the Scotsman's spare surroundings, and an elegantly distressed nobleman stepped out and introduced himself as the father of the boy. And Farmer Fleming had saved this boy. And he said, "I want to repay you, and you've saved my son's life." "No, I can't accept payment for what I did," the Scottish farmer replied, waving off the offer. At that moment, the farmer's own son came to the door of the family hovel. "And is that your son?" the nobleman asked. "And yes," the father replied proudly. "I'll make you a deal. Let me provide him with the level of education my own son will enjoy. If the lad is anything like his father, he'll be, no doubt, a man to be proud of." And so that's what happened. Farmer Fleming's poor son attended the very best schools and in time graduated from St. Mary's Hospital Medical School in London and went on to become known throughout the world as Sir Alexander Fleming, the discoverer of penicillin. Years afterwards, the same nobleman's son who was saved from the bog was stricken with pneumonia. And what saved his life? Penicillin. The name of the nobleman? Lord Randolph Churchill. His son's name? Sir Winston Churchill. Someone once said, "What goes around comes around." Work like you don't need the money. Love like you'd never been hurt. Dance like nobody's watching. Sing like nobody's listening. And live like it's heaven on earth. That was a note. Wanted to share it. You, Therese, have a nice day.